to His Time. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is Monday, December 8th, and it is time to check in with Dr. Bob Weiss at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Good morning, Dr. Weiss.
Hey, good morning to you and your listeners.
Well, thank you. A blessed Monday morning to you.
I hope everybody's wide-eyed and bushy-tailed. I'm not sure what all of that means, but thank the Lord for another day.
And there's no ice this morning in St. Louis, so that made the commute a little bit easier this Monday.
Yeah, you really had a tough go last time.
Woo.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what I've got here. I got a few subjects. I want to come back to one that actually is quoting one of our pastor professors from Valpo, but what I'm trying to do here is give some overviews of what's happening in bioethics around the world, just to let people know that if they think this is a strange world, wait till they hear what's going on in bioethics. In bioethics, that is what's right and wrong for human conduct and judgment in life. That's kind of what that phrase means. It's very, I'm going to use a complex phrase here. It's very utilitarian. Now, what that means is bioethics is targeted to do things to keep people happy, where the ends justify the means. It has very little to do with, in many cases, from our viewpoint, preserving and caring for life from the conception till death. But it is one of those areas, the mainstream bioethics, and not all bioethicists are this way. They tend to look at things like, if we can get this done, if the means are justified by the ends, or the ends are justified by the means, then we have good ends for helping people, fine, even if it means a loss of life. So what I want to just share here is in Peru, they have just discovered that approximately 300,000 women were sterilized by the president. Now, he has just been prosecuted for this in one sense, but let off in another sense because of politics. They had forced sterilization in the 1990s to control population. So that issue is up in front again, because in the United States from 1920s to the 1970s, we've had forced sterilization here in this country to the point of 80,000 people being sterilized by force to increase the quote-unquote, get rid of the bad people so that the good people can reproduce and bring our country up to a level of a utopian society. And that is part of what happened here in the United States. Fortunately, that was stopped by an attorney who got tired of the ACLU's, procrastination, and she stopped this. She resigned and went out after these people and got it stopped in the mid-70s. The other one is, and I'll come back to this, is the question, should severely disabled infants be euthanized? There was an article that came out, now this is a complicated journal, in the Journal of Thoracic and Cardiovascular Surgery, that one person said yes, and then a professor from Gilbert Mailander, who's written several books that deal with the sanctity of human life, he has an argument in here that I'll come back a little bit later to, at time permitting, but the question is, should severely disabled infants be euthanized? And this one man says, yeah, we should do this because we don't want the parents, and here's his argument, to suffer unnecessarily. And then Gilbert Mailander comes back and says, now, wait a minute. This is ridiculous thinking, is that if you start to euthanize children who are severely disabled, for example, in cases of Down's, open spine, and other situations, then we're saying that they're not our equal. That is, in terms of the first article, where it says, God has made me and all creatures and given me my body, soul, eyes, ears, and all my members, and still preserves them. We're saying that they're not our equal, that they are something less. And Gilbert Mailander says, they're not something less. You know, they're still creatures of God that need to be taken care of. So that's another one that's going on in bioethics around the world. The other one is, I'm happy to hear this, is Thailand finally has voted to ban commercial surrogacy in the country. That is, women who are donating their reproductive organs to carry somebody else's baby, because they're running into lots of issues in terms of health care. So that's another issue that's going on in the world. And the very last one that I'll share with our listeners is, the Chinese scientists, and this again has been published in a journal in genetics, they believe that they have found a gene for singleness. That is to say, a gene makes certain people, I guess you might say, bad at relationships. And so their comment is, it's all about genes. It's all about genetic engineering. So those are some areas. And, of course, from our viewpoint as Christians, we would say it's not all about our genes. It's all about God making us to be his own and baptizing us into his family, that we are a body and a soul, and that the soul isn't dependent on our genetics. Especially when you have identical twins, people say, well, did the soul divide? And I said, no, I don't know. I don't think so, because it's not dependent on genes. I call this God's technology. Certainly the body did divide and the genes did divide, but the soul is passed on, but we don't know how it's passed on. And so those are some areas that are happening out there in the world of bioethics, Andy, and I think that the one that really concerns me is the one that should severely disable infants be euthanized, simply because this is published in a rather major scientific journal that people read, you know, not certainly just scientists, but even lay people involved in the euthanasia argument, because we have 5 states here in the United States that deal with physician-assisted suicide. So, So I think that this one doctor who really wants to argue that this is a good thing because it ends suffering, and we don't want these young people to suffer, so he says, quote unquote, it's once we have concluded that death is what is in the best interest of the infant, it is unreasonable not to bring about this death as painlessly and as much control in terms of timing by the parents as feasible, because it's that the parents and the doctors and nurses would suffer unnecessarily if we let this child continue in with the physical defects that they have. So he's this issue is raising its ugly head again, and it takes us back, obviously, to first article issues, to certainly the second and third article. So those are some areas that I just wanted to bring up, that we can't just kind of sit back in the weeds and say, well, that doesn't bother me, doesn't impact me. It certainly does as a Christian.
All important stuff, that when you're just bringing up, just alone in Thailand, the issue that they're finally realizing that this is a problem to commercialize this one. Just eye-opening.
Yeah, it's very eye-opening. In my class in genetic science and Christian perspective that I'm teaching right now, we're just kind of going through the basics of genetics, and there are, you know, at least I know several Christians who are geneticists, and it's not all about our genes, but that's the identity that people want to give us right now. And I think in Thailand, with this interim parliament vote to support a bill to ban commercial surrogacy in the country, it looks like it probably will pass. But I think that, and this all came about in August when a Thai mother who carried twin babies from an Australian couple accused them of banding a baby boy with Down syndrome while taking the healthy sister. And this is the problem that happens with surrogate wombs. And surrogacy in Latin means one who takes the place of another. I realize that we've talked about this before with embryo adoption. People say, well, that's not the same thing as surrogacy. When somebody purchases eggs that other couples do not want anymore, and they put them into another set of parents that have been chosen womb, well, of course it's surrogacy, because you're replacing, you're a substitute, basically. And in this context, people say, yeah, but here we go again, Andy. You know, the ends justify the means. And if we can have a baby, then the means of carrying a child, having somebody else carry, quote-unquote, our child, fine. But in this case, this mother who was the surrogate, you know, said, wait a minute, you can't abandon this Downs baby, you know, and take your healthy sister. And so this whole thing has been ongoing, and even in Japan, this is another one of those issues where some women have, at least there's one case they're looking into where this one surrogate has basically carried 15 babies for different couples. And so this whole situation, from the standpoint of, you know, surrogacy, takes us back to Abraham, Hagar, and Sarah in Genesis 15 and 16. And where God, of course, believes this is an abomination because it violates the one flesh union. And we're talking flesh, you know, between a husband and a wife. While people think this is great, it still is not in the purview of Christian faith to say, yeah, this is okay, we're going to make the exception the rule. There are no exceptions that become rules with God's word, because, you know, we're all creatures of God, and whatever God gives us in a child, and it's easy for me to say this, but we have lost one child in our family, one daughter, you know, that was born dead. And when you bury your grandchild this way, it's pretty difficult. So these are difficult things, as you've mentioned.
Well, certainly difficult things. And it seems that we've only begun the conversation on these things. These conversations need to continue as the world's worldview continually moves away from a perspective that values all human life, and grateful that we have opportunities to in this country to be a voice to stand up for life in this world.
Well, that's right. We got to keep these in the front, and that's what I'm trying to do here with several of these subjects, so people can start thinking as Christians. You know, what would Jesus do? But mm-hmm. God has already taught us a great deal about the life with the incarnation that's coming up in celebration of the birth of Christ.
Well, Dr. Weiss, I look forward to more conversations with you in the future. I know we're winding down out of time. With just about 30 seconds left, anything else you want to share with us as we wrap up our time together this morning?
Well, yeah, I just would like to encourage people regarding this whole issue of suffering to take a look at 1 Peter chapter 1, 3 through 8. It is a great text about suffering and faith, and I find it very, very encouraging. And I think that when we get into these issues, mm-hmm. the Scriptures does give us a great deal of comfort in our suffering, regardless of what it is. So I would encourage our listeners to take a look at 1 Peter 1, 3 through 8.
Go, and you can check it out. We just studied that just recently on his time in the Daily Lectionary Study. So go back and look at the archives of his time and look at the Daily New Testament reading and the Daily Lectionary Study. We've got some good stuff there.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
That's good.
Thanks so much, Dr. Weiss. We'll talk again soon. God's blessings.
Okay, thanks a lot, and God's peace to you and your listeners. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Coming up in just a little bit, we've got our study of the Daily New Testament reading with Pastor Jeremiah Johnson on Worldwide KFUO.